Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every Wednesday, and we do our best to bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports. If you pride yourself on being a little more informed than the average sports fan, maybe you want some humor mixed in, you are going to enjoy the Daily Dose. Stick around. You can download, you can subscribe just about anywhere. Let me give you some sites you can subscribe on. Obviously, iTunes, the big one out there. Go to iTunes. You can get it there. Podcast Republic has it. Blueberry has it. Spreaker has it. Stitcher has it. TuneIn has it. AudioSeer has it. Podcast Blaster has it. iPodder has it. Podcast X has it. There's a number of different sites out there that you can subscribe and grab it every single week. If you would like to contact me, you can hit me up on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. That is DalyDose Sports. Same name for Facebook. You can find me on Facebook. If you would like a more interesting feed than your great aunt and her three kids, hit me up on Facebook. You can find me on there. If you'd like to go over to our website, check out our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. We have articles that go up a few times a week. I think you will enjoy the articles. Might want to head over there and check those out. They're on a wide variety of subjects. If you would like to email the show, comes directly to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, dailydosesports@gmail.com. I have received some really, really good emails, and I have a little more about that later in the podcast today. Got a lot of things to get to today. Got a number of things coming out, and we've got a little bit of a different show for you today. You might have saw that Marcus Mariota has reached an agreement with the Tennessee Titans, and they have signed their deal. That was kind of a long time coming. There was rumors out there that Marcus Mariota wanted to surf, and so that's why this took so long. I don't know if that's true. Did you see Shaquille O'Neal and Scottie Pippen kind of get into it on Twitter a little bit? They were going back and forth. Shaq says that the greatest teams of the Lakers of all time would crush the greatest team from the Chicago Bulls all time by 50 points. And Shaq put up, you know, some pictures. So Shaq made his starting five. It was like Magic and Kareem and Shaquille, you know, all these great Laker players of all time. And then he put up basically the 96 Bulls. First off, let's get one thing straight. Shaq, I don't know if you get to be on the starting five. Like, are you beating out Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Wilt Chamberlain? I don't think you are. I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Yes, the Lakers have a far more abundant history than the Chicago Bulls do. I also found it odd that he didn't put like some of the great Chicago Bulls. I mean, Artis Gilmore doesn't make the team. I can't see Michael Jordan getting beat by 50 by anybody. Nobody beat Mike by 50 in anything. So I'm not sure that's going to happen. You probably saw the Nuggets traded Ty Lawson to the Rockets. The Rockets get Lawson and probably a half-drunk bottle of, like, scotch, and a future second-round pick from the Nuggets. The Nuggets get Prigioni, who I kind of like. They get Papa Nicolau, who I sort of like. Joey Dorsey. They get a lottery-protected first-round pick in the 2016 draft. The Rockets needed a point guard. The Houston Rockets needed a point guard. Ty Lawson averages, you know, 14-6 for his career, 14-7 for his career. Probably will be intoxicated most of the time. We'll see how that... Here's my problem. Here's my problem from the Rockets. Here is your leadership core. Here are the leaders on your team. A drunken Ty Lawson, James Harden, who I do like, and Dwight Howard. Do you see a problem with that, Houston? Now, the Nuggets are just trying to surround their rookie point guard, Emmanuel Mudiay, who they really, really like, with some good people. I guess both teams kind of got what they wanted. I don't know. The Rockets felt like they needed a point guard. They did get a point guard if he can pass the breathalyzer. The Lakers were apparently interested in Lawson. They were actually in the bidding on Lawson late as well. And you might say why, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You just drafted D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell did not look good in summer league. And I don't put a lot of stock in summer league. I really don't, but he looked a lot slower than I think they thought he would, and he turned the ball over way, way, way too often. And what was that? How was that relationship going to work if they had brought in Lawson? Was Lawson going to like take D'Angelo Russell out for drinks. I don't know how that would have gone. Might not have been the best mentor, so maybe he went where he should have. You know, we can talk a little bit about the Spurs. Becky Hammon, assistant coach, coaching the Spurs to the Summer League Championship, which, yeah, Summer League doesn't matter a whole lot. I understand that. But hey, pretty impressive run by Becky Hammon. And I've heard from some people who know, and they say that Spurs players really respect the insight that she has, such insight on the game and some of the things that she sees in the game, some of the things that she sees from a technical side, because she's used to that playing below the rim idea, that she kind of sees things a little bit differently. Great job by Becky Hammon. Becky Hammon, a CSU kid here in Colorado, big ups to her. And we'll see, does she get any kind of an interview? Does she get any kind of a look? I mean, you're in a great franchise from her. I'm not leaving anytime soon, but it does make you wonder if she becomes a little bit of a candidate after she leads the Spurs to a Summer League championship, which is kind of like winning the preseason Super Bowl in football. We could also talk about, Zach Johnson persevering. He wins the Open at St. Andrews, although I thought that might have been a little bit more of a story about Dustin Johnson kind of choking and Jordan Spieth just kind of dropping out. Tiger Woods did not even make the cut. Tiger Woods now says that his spin rates are off. Tiger Woods' spin rates are off. Remember like a month ago, he said that his glutes weren't firing? Tiger is that friend. You have that friend that goes to Vegas and he tells you, hey, I've got a system. This time I'm going to win. Are you? Are you going to beat Vegas? That's what's going to happen? Tiger might be delusional. Or we could talk, about the Mets struggles lately or how the Dodgers might, trade Yasiel Puig. And I've got news for you, Dodger fans. If Puig can't get along with Don Mattingly and a franchise who has basically coddled him from the beginning, who can he play for? But you know what? I'm not going to do that today. I don't feel like doing that today because, for starters, I'm going to go to sleep. And I know if I'm asleep, you're probably asleep too. So we're going to do a few top five lists. And this time, you might remember, we did some top five lists. We did a list where we did some underrated players, some players that were a little bit underrated. I'm going to lean towards more kind of overrated people this week, towards more overrated things this week. Not every list is going to be overrated, but we're going to talk about some overrated things this week on the podcast. Hey, college football is coming, and I love college football. We have games starting September 3rd. I believe that is like 43 days away. It is coming very, very quickly, and they're decent games. It's not like, well, yeah, we've got some garbage games. No, we have some pretty decent games. North Carolina versus South Carolina, that should be a pretty good one. Michigan versus Utah, that game is at Utah, and Michigan and Jim Harbaugh had better be very, very careful. That is a scrappy Utah team. We have TCU going to Minnesota. Minnesota last year, obviously the job that they did. We will have college football previews coming up. We'll take a look at some major conferences. We'll take a look at some of the big players that maybe you aren't familiar with, or maybe some of the Heisman favorites and those kind of things in the next, over the next month or so as we get ready for college football season. I'm excited for it. Should be a lot of fun. But right now, I want to jump into our first top five list of the day. And our first top five list is the most overrated college football player of all time. Now, it's not that easy to put this together. I'll be honest with you. As I started to do this, I really, really started to struggle because it's hard. There are so many kids that come out of high school that we have rated way, way, way too high. We have the guys that come into college and they never make it. They're never any good. They never turn out. I kind of went with guys that we actually think of now as actually being pretty good. And they might be just a little more overrated than you initially think. And it's also hard to separate some of these players' college careers from what they did in the NFL. Because I can look at a million different players and say, well, yeah, they were good in college, but what happened in the NFL? Well, wrong system, wrong whatever, wrong coaching staff, wrong, just the wrong scheme for them to be in. There's a number of, but I'm talking about when they were in college. They might not have been as good as you think. And every year, the media is jamming someone down our throat. It's usually Notre Dame, but they're jamming someone down our throat and it ends up not being quite as good. So here are the most overrated college football players of all time. And again, these aren't the guys that were a complete miss. These are the guys that you might think of as being good, as being really, really good. I'm going to tell you why they're not quite as good as you think. And don't get mad at me. I'm just stating facts. Number five on our list of most overrated college football players of all time, USC quarterback Matt Leinart. Now, I know. Leinart's stats look great. He was 37-2 as a starter. Two-time Orange Bowl MVP. He won the Heisman in 2004. For his career, he threw 99 touchdowns. He had 23 interceptions. Now, for one, we think back to other USC quarterbacks that maybe weren't that great. Like Matt Barkley, like Mark Sanchez, like John David Booty, like a little bit of Carson Palmer maybe. Never really quite turned out. But when you think of Matt Leinart, you think of that great run that USC team had. He had a lot of talent around him too. He had a ton of talent around him. I mean, Reggie Bush. And Lendale White in the backfield just standing right next to him for starters. But here's the one thing that I want you to think about. They played no one. They didn't play anyone any of those seasons. The Pac-10 was horrible in those seasons. Do you realize that in his bowl games, USC played a John Navarre Michigan team, a Jason White Oklahoma team, over, I might add, an undefeated Auburn team who we all wanted them to play. We didn't want USC playing that horrible Oklahoma team. We knew how that was going to go. We wanted USC to play an undefeated Auburn team that had somehow gone through the SEC undefeated, but then they weren't given anything. This was just a little bit before the times. This was just a little bit before we started realizing how good the SEC was at the time. And we said, oh, no, Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma was good back in the 70s. Let's jam them in there. So we got a Jason White Oklahoma squad instead of Auburn. But here's the thing about Matt Leinart. Matt Leinart, in his biggest game of his career, faces Vince Young and Texas in the Rose Bowl and loses to Vince Young. Now, here's my challenge to you with losing to Vince Young and Texas. Name another player on that Texas team. Leinart should have won that game single-handedly, and he failed. Here's the other thing. USC, in the years that Leinart was there, played 12 ranked teams total. Plus. I know you're sitting there and you're saying, well, yeah, Matt Leinart, he did okay when he was at USC. Let me just throw this out at you, and this is the clincher. Matt Leinart was in a hot tub with Paris Hilton. You're going to tell me he wasn't overrated? That totally epitomizes being overrated. Matt Leinart in a hot tub with Paris Hilton. Ugh, can't have that. That is our number five entry on most overrated college football player of all time. Let's move forward to number four. And I know I'm going to get some people angry when I put this guy's name out there. Because when you think of him, he's the little guy that could. He's the little guy that got it done. Doug Flutie at Boston College. We all remember the Hail Mary versus Miami. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not a Miami fan. I love him for that. I love him for beating Miami the way that he did on that last second play. But let's be honest, he wasn't that great. In his career at Boston College, and he basically started and played all four seasons, 70 touchdowns, 56 interceptions? Are you kidding me? 56 interceptions. He averaged less than 3,000 yards per season. He wins the Heisman in 84, basically on that one play against Miami, basically on the Hail Mary play against Miami. Boston College went 32-14 under Flutie in 84. When Flutie wins the Heisman, they were 10-2. He had 30 touchdowns. He had 13 interceptions. He threw for about 3,600 yards. The guy who finished third. And on this season, I believe Boston College finished like 11th on the season. The guy who finished third place had 33 touchdowns, only 11 interceptions, 3,900 yards. Oh, and his team won the national championship, and that was Robbie Bosco. But somehow, with BYU, BYU won the national championship. But somehow, because of that play against Miami, we've just kind of catapulted Doug Flutie up into one of the greatest quarterbacks and one of the greatest college football players of all time. He's good. He wasn't great. Number three on our list, most overrated college football players of all time. You knew a Notre Dame guy was going to get on here. It's not a matter of if a Notre Dame, it's just who. Because I had so many to choose from. So many to choose from. Ron Paulus, Brady Quinn, But I went with Rick Meyer. Rick Meyer at Notre Dame. You know, he got a ton of credit for a couple of a few different reasons. For one, he was a quarterback. Two, he was at Notre Dame. Three, he was white. Meyer was 29-7-1 as a starter. Solid, not great, but he had so much help. I want you to think of the players that were at Notre Dame when he was a starting quarterback there. Ricky Waters, Dorsey Levins, Jerome Bettis, Rocket Ismail, Reggie Brooks, Tony Brooks, Derek Brown. He was loaded on offense. He had everybody around him. For his career, Rick Meyer, 41 touchdowns and 23 interceptions. He's probably a better runner than he was a passer. And somehow, and again, I tried to separate their NFL career. Somehow, Rick Meyer had 12 seasons in the NFL, despite being a pretty bad passer. If you want to go back to that Orange Bowl that Notre Dame played versus Colorado when Colorado ekes out a victory like 10-9, you know, they called back the punt on Rocket Ismail and all that. Look at how inaccurate Rick Meyer was. He consistently threw the ball to the wrong jersey all night. Despite being a poor passer, somehow Rick Meyer played 12 seasons in the NFL. For his career in the NFL, 50 touchdowns, 76 interceptions. And again, I go back to the reason that he was in the NFL so long. He was a quarterback, went to Notre Dame. He was white. Number two on our list, most overrated. This guy, wow. Number two, quarterback again, Miami, Gino Toretta. You know, Toretta won the Heisman in 1992. He beat out Marshall Faulk and Garrison Hurst. And when you look at the numbers, Toretta was 23-1 as a starter. He must have been good, right? He had 47 touchdowns. He had 24 interceptions. But, you know, Miami wasn't really playing a lot of talent. They were an independent school up until 91. They didn't play in a conference. And then when they joined a conference, they played in the Big East. Or the Big East. So they were playing, you know, the monsters like Syracuse and Pitt and Virginia Tech and West Virginia. Sorry, Big Rob, had to throw in West Virginia. Rutgers and yes, Temple. They were playing Temple every single year. But again, when you look at the talent that Gino Toretta had around him, Horace Copeland and Lamar Thomas and Kevin Williams, and that defense was absolutely loaded. Ryan McNeil, Michael Barrow, Darren Smith, Jesse Armstead. I mean, I don't want to, you know, exaggerate this. I don't want to oversimplify it, but I feel like I probably could have played quarterback for that Miami team and been pretty good. Gino Toretta, pretty overrated. Won the Heisman. When you're doing like one of those Heisman quizzes and you can't come up with an answer, just throw in Gino Toretta because you probably forgot that he won one. Number one on our most overrated, and I can already hear people are going to be mad about this one. You're not going to like this one. Number one most overrated college football player. Now, it's not his fault. And I'm not, none of these players on the list do I like dislike necessarily. I don't particularly care. This one, the situation being what it was, you're in rarefied air and you don't really deserve to be there. All right, I'm just going to throw it out there. Number one, most overrated college football player ever, Ohio State running back Archie Griffin. He's the only player to win two Heismans. He won it back-to-back in 74 and 75. And we kind of have an unwritten rule that you have to be complete. I mean, he's the only guy to do it. You have to be like out of your mind, insanely good to win two Heismans. There will be guys that were like, no, they should win their second Heisman. And we'll say, no, they can't. You can't win two Heismans. And it's basically because of Archie Griffin. Because when he won his second one, everyone kind of went, really? Really? He's got to be the greatest player in like college football history, right? Right? He won two Heismans? Not really. He was really, really good in 1974. He was really good. He ran for 1,695 yards and had 12 touchdowns. Pretty good. He had almost a 7 yard average, 6.6 yards per carry. And Ohio State, lost, you know, in their bowl game, they lose in the Rose Bowl to USC. They go 10-2. It's a nice season. So the next year, Ohio State goes undefeated all the way through the regular season. And as a result, everyone's like, well, they hand the ball off every play. Like Archie Griffin gets the ball on every single play. Who else can we vote for? They're undefeated. We know he won it last year, but they're undefeated, and he's getting all these carries again. I guess we kind of got to vote for him again, but his numbers really weren't as good. He still had 1,400 yards. He had five touchdowns. He had five touchdowns. And then Ohio State gets to the Rose Bowl again, and they lose to UCLA 23-10 in the Rose Bowl. And UCLA quarterback John Ciara wins the MVP. Oklahoma wins the championship. And really, when you look at the stats and everything, again, Ohio State's defense just absolutely carried them. They allowed 8 points a game during Griffin's career there. You didn't have to really do anything if you're only giving up 8 points a game. You just had to score 9 points a game. Archie Griffin is the most overrated college football player of all time. I'm sorry to break that to you. Especially if you're a Big Ten honk, especially if you're an Ohio State fan. I apologize. I'm not mad at you. I'm just stating what's true out there. We gotta jump forward. I've got another top five list for you here. I've told you we're kind of in the lull before football gets started. We're kind of in that gap after basketball has ended. Not a lot going on. And we could talk golf, like I said before. We could talk these mid-season baseball. I'd rather talk about something that you're halfway interested in, because who suffers during this time? It's not the players, it's the fans. We don't have anything else to do right now. We're waiting around. Oh, can football please start? So we're going to give you a couple top five lists today. And here's our next one. Top five dumb sports sayings used by fans. The dumb sports cliches. Now, I'm not talking about the typical ones. I'm not talking about the defense wins championships or win one game at a time. I'm not talking about that. I'm really not. I'm talking about the ones that run a little bit deeper. Some of the mentality and some of the thoughts that sports fans kind of have. And sometimes if you hang out, the great thing about this show is I know how I have intelligent listeners. And most of you, I know for a fact, I'm going to read these and you're going to say, I don't say that, but I've heard other people say that because I have smart listeners. That's just how it is. But I'm telling you, here are some really, really, if you hear someone say these, you're going to say, man, seriously, you're going to throw that out and just lob this out there. You don't want to get caught using these. Number five on our list of dumb sports cliches. And this one gets thrown out there all the time. The refs just hate my team. Or the media just hates my team. You know, I was watching the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. And to be very honest, I don't really have a horse in that race. I don't really care. I'm just watching for an entertaining story. Cavs fans are sitting there going, dude, the refs are just ripping us off. The refs are ripping us off so bad. Oh, they just want Golden State to win. They just want Golden State to win it because they hate LeBron. And then I go over to, and I hear Warriors fans. And the Warriors fans are like, oh, man, the refs are ripping us off so bad. They just want LeBron James to win. They're just totally ripping us. And I was like, seriously? I'm going to be honest with you. The refs, one, are probably doing the best job that they can, although I sympathize with you when you look at NBA refs and you say they're not very good, because they're not. Most of them are like 70 plus, and it's all they can do to get up and down the floor. So I'll give you that the officiating might be incompetent. But do you really think the officials care who wins? They're just trying to keep up with the game. They're just trying to stay in it. Same thing with the media. Oh, ESPN just loves LeBron and they give him a ton of coverage. But do you think that they minded Golden State winning and they got to put Steph Curry on everything? They don't care. And it's the same thing in every single sport. It's the same thing with your high school team. The officials don't care about your college team. I know a few college football fans, big college football fans. Oh, the refs, they just rip off my college team every year. Really? They go out of their way just to make sure your college team loses. What do they care? Don't go to the refs just hate my team card. Bad, bad, bad card to play. Number four on my list. Here's another one. Here's another one that the delusional fans drop. Well, if I was calling the plays, really? Really? Now, I hesitate to use this one because I know that my audience is smarter than on most sports shows. And I have smart listeners. And they wouldn't say it. My listeners probably wouldn't say it. But I hear like a celebrity, or I hear like, you know, you hear the guy down at the bar and he's like, man, if I was calling the plays, here's what I'd run. Would you? Is that what you'd do? You'd run that old high school, you know, trick play that you ran against some of the most advanced defenses out there? You're gonna run that, you know, against like Rex Ryan's defense? Is that what you do? You're gonna run this defense against Tom Brady? Is that how you'd fix things? I'm not sure you would. I was talking to someone, and they said, "Well, man, I could be an offensive coordinator like the NFL." Could you really? You have no experience coaching whatsoever, but you could roll out there and start telling Peyton Manning how to fix his game. You could start calling some plays that would get him going, or run a good quick hitter for like LeBron James to get him open on the perimeter. Is that how that would go down? And I don't want to hammer on people that just don't get it, but the idea that you would somehow call better plays, you're kidding yourself. And I say this as someone who has coached a little bit, granted at a lower level, but I'm telling you, there's a lot more that goes into it than just saying, run play number 52. It's pretty complex. And the people doing it are really, really smart. You might not like them. You might not agree with the calls that they make. But you know the play that you really hate? The play when you're sitting there and you're watching down there and you're like, oh man, he should have called this play. You know why you hate that play? Because it didn't work. If it worked, he was a genius. You're just mad that it didn't work. Moving on to number three, dumb sports cliches. It goes right along with that. Is this idea that winning coaches are smarter than losing coaches? And let me explain what I mean for just a second. Do you remember when Mike Shanahan was here in Denver? He was the mastermind. He had John Elway, and he had Terrell Davis, and he had Shannon Sharp, and he had like Gary Zimmerman, and he had a pretty scrappy defense, and he was the mastermind. We were like, oh, dude's a genius. Any play he rolls out there just works. I mean, he's so smart. He's so much smarter than everyone else. And then he went to Washington, and he had like an aging Donovan McNabb calling plays, and we're like, man, Mike Shanahan's kind of stupid. He's really dumb. What a moron that guy is. I've got news for you. He didn't just suddenly get stupid. He got worse players. Remember when Mike D'Antoni was down in Phoenix and they were running that 7 seconds or less offense with Steve Nash? And we were like, dude's a genius. He's like rewriting the way the NBA is going. And then he went out to LA with a bunch of broke players and Kobe Bryant on his last legs. We're like, man, Mike D'Antoni's an idiot. Dude can't even get a job right now. Again, I've got news for you. He didn't just get stupid. He just got bad players. And bad players will make a coach look really, really dumb. Don't believe the hype that suddenly they're stupid. They're not. They just don't have as good of players. Number two on our list of dumb sports sayings. Oh, this one's brutal. Well, God really smiled on my team today. You will hear professional athletes say this. This isn't as much about the fans. You will hear like a quarterback, well, God really smiled on my team today. God, you know, God came through for us in a big way today. Well, what about the losing team? God hates them? God doesn't like the losing team. So he was like, you know what? I'm going to give this one to the Patriots because I'm kind of mad at the Seahawks, to be honest. I mean, Belichick does things by the book, darn it. And I feel like they deserve a win. I've got news for you. I feel like God has other things to do. I feel like God's kind of busy. You know, making sure planets don't collide into each other and stuff like that. I have a feeling he's probably not just watching Earth going, you know, it was a big playoff game today. Trying to decide Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers. Well, let's see. Wilson mentioned my name last week in the press conference. Rodgers, he's dating that Olivia Munn chick. You know, I'm going Wilson. Let there be Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl. I have a feeling he's doing something else. I'm not sure he cares about American football that much. Number one on our list, and I'm telling you right now, this is a pet peeve of mine, and people that know me know I can't stand this. This is a personal pet peeve of mine, and sports fans say this all the time. For instance, you have Cavaliers versus Warriors. Scrappy series, comes down to game 6, Warriors. And you have the fan that doesn't understand anything say this. Well, the Warriors just wanted it more than Cleveland did. Oh, is that what it came down to? They just wanted it a little more? Oh, well, they just wanted it. They just really, really wanted it. No, you know what it has to come down to? They had better players. They had better execution. They actually didn't have empty possessions. They didn't have a player jam his head into a camera in the front row. That's what it came down to. It didn't have to anything to do with, well, they just wanted. I've got news for you. These are the best athletes on the planet in their respective sports. Whatever sporting event you might be watching, you're watching probably some really, really good athletes. They all want it really, really bad. When you sit there and you look at the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl, you say, well, Patriots just wanted it more. Did they? Is that what happened? They just wanted it. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm buying that one. That might be the stupidest sports cliche that we use of all time. Team A just wanted a little bit more than Team B. Granted, both teams have basically put their entire life and well-being into playing the sport that they play. Their coaching staffs haven't slept in like 9 months trying to prepare for it. But hey, that team just wanted it more. You know what that tells me about you as a sports fan? You probably don't know what you're talking about because you don't know what else to say. So you just go, well, they just wanted it more. Let's move forward to our next top five list. And I've got one here that's a little bit different for you. You know, we have these athletes, and this one, I'm going to be honest, this one comes from Big Rob, because he had emailed me a few weeks back, and he said, you know, you might have saw the story with Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp had like bit and like stomped on his girlfriend, and we were kind of talking about, you know, these players that kind of go from champ to chump, because then they end up with a lot of problems after their career. I mean, had an amazing career, but they kind of end up with a bunch of post-career problems. And I started to look at this. There's too many players out there that have gotten in trouble, you know, criminally or whatever it might be. There's so many of them out there. But I'm going to give you five post-career decisions that I'm not going to say they're the worst, but they're pretty bad. They're pretty bad. And, you know, it's funny because we look at these athletes and our athletes today, you know, especially in America, they're kind of our heroes. They're kind of these people that we look up to, and you've got posters of them on your wall and you follow them every week. And especially as a kid, you really look up to them. You forget sometimes that they're just athletes, and they're not always, and I'm not saying every time, but they're not always the smartest people. I mean, let's be honest. A lot of these players get paid to run their heads into things. You can't be that bright. And again, it's kind of a broad brush. I don't want to paint them all that way because there are some really, really intelligent guys out there. But there's a few of them that maybe don't make the best decisions. Now, when I looked at these, and I'm not going to say they're the top five worst post-career decisions. I'm not. I'm just going to say that they're five bad ones. Five bad ones. Because there's a million worsts out there. Well, maybe not worse than a couple of these guys. But there's a million really, really bad post-career decisions out there. And they're not always criminal. They're not always criminal. Sometimes they're just bad decisions. Let me give you an example. Five bad post-career decisions. Number five, and I'm going to be honest, this might be the saddest story on the list. It's right in there. One of the greatest quarterbacks ever, the Baltimore Colts, Johnny Unitas. Now, when we look back at Johnny Unitas, and if you know, are a younger person, and maybe you haven't seen him, maybe you haven't seen his career or even seen clips. I'm not old enough to have seen him play. I've seen a lot of clips. I've read a lot about Johnny Unitas. The best equivalent that I could give to Johnny Unitas present day, honestly, would be like a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady. I mean, guy was revered even at that time. He was so, so good. And he was a guy that really started to introduce football with kind of that timing pattern. He would go out with his wide receivers. They say that he would turn off the lights and he would complete, you know, 100 passes with no lights on in the stadium at night, because he knew where they were going to be. They ran the pattern. He called the pattern. They ran it exactly, and he threw it to a spot, and they caught it. Or at least they told him they did. Maybe he couldn't see it. I don't know. But that whole timing pattern thing, a lot of that stuff came from Johnny Unitas. Phenomenal, phenomenal quarterback. If I was doing a list of greatest quarterbacks ever, I got to put Johnny Unitas in there. The stuff that he did, the way that he advanced the game. He was so, so good. I mean, he held the record for years of 47 games in a row with a touchdown pass. Three times he was the league MVP. He was a Super Bowl champion. Now, he only made about $4 million in his career. Not much. But to be fair, you know, back when he played, $4 million went a little bit longer than it would now. We look at $4 million like, oh yeah, you got chump change. Well, yeah, compared to what guys get now, he wasn't making much. But back at that time, he was making pretty good money. He retires. And he becomes a CBS commentator. Did a number of games. But the thing about Johnny Unitas, and again, it wasn't anything criminal. By all accounts, Johnny U was a good guy, well-respected. People love Johnny Unitas. He just had some really, really bad investments. He invested in like some bowling alleys and some weird restaurants and some Florida real estate that didn't turn out to be exactly what it was supposed to be. And Johnny Unitas, for the money that he made at that time, when he died in 2002, he was completely broke. Didn't have any money. And in fact, his widow, his wife, was left with lawsuits pending against his estate. His widow had to file bankruptcy. Sad, sad story of Johnny Unitas, a guy who, like I said, one of the greatest players ever, died with nothing. And it wasn't anything criminal. It wasn't anything, negligent. It was just bad investments. And we forget sometimes that a lot of these players, when they get past their career, they don't always know what to do with their money. They don't always know what to do with their lives. Okay, now what direction do they go? When you see guys like a Carmelo Anthony, and he's starting to already plan for what he will do later in basketball, these are the stories as to why they do that. Because there are so many guys that got out of their athletic career and had no idea what to do with themselves. And they got themselves in a lot of trouble. Number four on our list of bad post-career decisions. It's not just the men. It's not just the men. Sometimes a female can get herself on the list too. Do you remember Marion Jones? Marion was a really, really talented athlete. And I mean really talented athlete. And she was pretty cute, despite, you know, having snaggle teeth, but really, really talented. You know, she won 3 gold medals in the 2000 Sydney Olympics. I mean, as a sprinter, just amazingly talented. She also played in the WNBA as a point guard. And she was also kind of shady. She had some things going on during her career. Obviously, some steroids. And then some things after her career, where she made, you know, decisions like check counterfeiting and check forging and committing perjury to the IRS and money laundering and other illegal drugs. Marion Jones was indicted, lost all of her medals. The Olympics went back and disqualified her from all of her medals. She declared bankruptcy. She also went to jail for 6 months for check fraud and for performance-enhancing drugs that were illegal. And the judge that sentenced her said, these weren't one-time mistakes. These were a repetition in an attempt to break the law. Marion Jones, you had everything. Why did you go down that path? And again, it wasn't like it was something where the judge said, well, it's just a one-time thing, made a mistake, young and dumb, and just it. No. No, just kind of lost her mind and went down a really, really bad path. Bad post-career decisions. Number three on our list. Now, it's kind of hard. I put a boxer on this list, and I probably shouldn't have boxers on this list because, let's be honest, name a boxer that hasn't made a few bad decisions. Leon Spinks comes in at number three. Now, Leon Spinks, for his career, and this is another sad story. This is more sad, I think. But Leon Spinks was 26 and 17. He was the heavyweight champion of the world in 1978. And the way he became the heavyweight champion in 78 was he beat, granted, a little bit of an aging, but a 36-year-old Muhammad Ali in one of the biggest upsets ever. See, Spinks had won a gold medal as a light heavy in the 76 Olympics. And then he beat Ali in February of 78. It was a 15-round split decision. he did it in just his eighth fight. So it was very, very early in his career. Ali didn't really train, didn't really get himself ready. And, you know, to give Spinks credit, he went out and he outboxed him and he kept moving and he seemed like he was younger. He seemed like he was a little more talented at the time because Ali didn't look like he had gotten himself ready for the fight. Kind of thought he had an easy fight against this young kid, you know, who at the time was like 8-0-1. He hadn't really fought anybody. It was just, you know, a seventh or eighth fight. It was very, very early. But then Spinks kind of went a little crazy. I mean, you become heavyweight champion of the world. Who doesn't become a little crazy? But for the rest of his life, so he fought Ali in February. They had the rematch in September. What is that? 7 months? In that gap, he got arrested 4 different times. Cocaine addiction. Had a big problem with drugs. Traffic violations, you know, driving down the highway on the wrong side of the highway, going down the wrong way. Spinks couldn't handle the fame and the fortune. He actually refused to fight the number one contender, Ken Norton. And he instead, he gave Ali a rematch with, of course, Ali won because he actually trained for it and he beat him. But the WBA stripped Spinks of his belt because he refused to fight Ken Norton. And then he lost the rematch. When Ali actually trained for it and actually prepared for it. Spinks, for the rest of his career, went 19-17. He wasn't very good. But post-career, it just continued to battle drugs, continued to live his life basically having no money because he blew all his money on cocaine. Found his son shot dead in the street. Lost every job that he could ever get. Ended up getting a job just as a greeter at a restaurant. But because of his addictions and because of his personality, would get fired from every single job. And last we've heard was working as like a janitor back in Chicago at a small boxing gym. Leon Spinks just couldn't, after his career, just couldn't quite get his life together. Taking him a long time, and from what I've heard, is at least a little bit healthier, living addiction-free. And you wish a guy like that, you know, some good things. But man, you talk about squandering, you know, a number of things that you had in life. This guy, this next guy, number two on our list of guys that I put him on post-career decisions, but he it's just the way he is. It's just the way he lives his life. Because Lawrence Taylor changed the game of football. Lawrence Taylor was one of the greatest football players to ever play. 10-time Pro Bowler, voted to the 75th anniversary All-Pro team. Battled with drugs and alcohol his entire life, though. Suspended several times for drug use. Has been in jail 3 separate times just for drug use. And then in 2011, I'm going to have to take a shower after I read this one, pled guilty to sexual misconduct involving a 16-year-old girl. Has also pled guilty to filing false tax returns in 1990, in 2000 to tax evasion. He's currently out on probation, but you know, Lawrence Taylor is a level 1 sex offender. Dude just cannot get himself right. And when you look at the way he played, and you look at the type of person he was on the field, unless you just have a switch where you can turn that on and off, I don't think Lawrence Taylor has that switch. I think he lives his whole life the way he played football, which is right at the edge and a little bit crazy and kind of a nutcase. Amazing, amazing football player. Could not rein it in his personal life. And Lawrence Taylor is just kind of out there. And since retiring, football was the perfect venue for him. Football was the perfect place for him to go out and be crazy. But you can't do that in the real world. Number one on our list, bad post-career decisions. Who else could it be? Let's be honest. The guy was a Heisman winner, 6-time Pro Bowler, NFL MVP, 4-time rushing champion. But in 1994, O.J. Simpson decided he would saw his ex-wife plus one's heads off. You know, then he went and hid out and he stayed in the Kardashian house while he figured out what story he was going to tell the police, and they maybe hid some evidence. we saw Robert Kardashian getting rid of a duffel bag full of most likely blood-covered clothes. Now, somehow, OJ got the not guilty verdict. Went and got Johnny Cochran, best in the business, gets the not guilty verdict. Half the people really happy, half the people real sad. Half the people still waiting for their lotto ticket that they thought they won something that day when he got his not guilty verdict. But, you know, O.J. Simpson couldn't stay out of trouble even then. Remember, he wrote that stupid, "Well, what if I did it?" book. And then he got found guilty in civil court by the Ron Goldman family, the other person that was murdered that night. He was found guilty in the civil case. As though that wasn't bad enough. In 1999, O.J. Simpson owed California $1.5 million in back taxes. Taxes get a lot of these athletes. You want to really, really help athletes? You got these young kids coming in college? Can you just teach? I realize that these kids going into college these days, when they're at the university of whatever, and they're basically playing semi-pro ball at the college of their choice, could we at least teach some of these kids how to pay their taxes? And I say that only half jokingly, because it does trip a lot of athletes off. I mean, you have these guys earning these multi-million dollar deals, and I don't think they realize Uncle Sam's going to want a big chunk of it. And if you don't pay it, they're going to come after you. If nothing else, can we just offer a college class on how to pay your taxes? Really beneficial. We're busy teaching Latin and Shakespeare. Could we just teach you how to pay your taxes? How to, you know, have good credit, how to take care of and balance a checkbook, how to buy a house, how to keep yourself liquid financially. Wouldn't that be some really good classes to teach some of these young kids or just anyone in society, as opposed to some of the nonsense and world history stuff that we kind of throw out there instead? Just throwing that out there. I'll get down off my soapbox. As though all this stuff against O.J. Simpson wasn't bad enough, in 2007, O.J. Simpson, another bad post-career decision, robbed a sports memorabilia shop at the Palace Station Casino in Vegas. Now, the smart thing about robbing a casino shop in Vegas is you know there won't be any cameras there. No one's gonna videotape a casino in Vegas. Yeah, except everyone. And so O.J. Simpson is currently serving 33 years in prison in Nevada for armed robbery. You beat the murder rap. You got away. You literally got away with murder. You just weren't bright enough to keep yourself out of trouble. O.J. Simpson doing 33 years for armed robbery in a Nevada state penitentiary. I'm telling you, it's not always the guys like that, but there's some sad stories out there. There's a million stories out there of guys who went from, you know, champ to chump, ended up getting themselves in a lot of trouble post-career. A number of those stories. I told you this week we were going to do some overrated lists, and we did our overrated college football player list, but I'm going to jump in to our final Daily Dose top five of the day. And like I said, we're getting you through this dry season. We'll have some different stuff coming for you over the next few weeks. But our last top five of the day is something a little bit different. This one is the top five actors who are really, really overrated playing athletes in sports movies. You know, there's a number of, and I've told you, if you listen to the show much, I've told you my take on most sports movies. I don't like them. I'm a sports guy, background in sports. That's what I've done for a number of years. When I see people pretending to be sports guys, it throws up some red flags in me. I go, you're not a sports guy. You're not that guy. I can see that a mile away. You should leave it to the pros. There's a movie, I've told you, I like sports documentaries because they actually are real. There's a movie out there, you know, He's Got Game, where they went and got Ray Allen to play the young sports guy, the young basketball player. Great job. Because you know what? When I look at Ray Allen, you know, playing basketball, I look at him and I say, oh yeah, it kind of looks like he knows how to play basketball. Yeah, what a thought that is, huh? Pretty amazing. Because if you leave it to Hollywood, like Hollywood thinks they know how to, you know, capture athletes, and here's what we're going to have them do, and doesn't go very well. And again, it's kind of like my overrated college football player. I'm telling you right now, you're going to hear a couple people on this list, and you're going to say, oh, CD, what are you doing? How are you putting him on the list? How are you putting that person on the list? They were great in that movie. That's a great movie. I'm not saying it's not a great movie. I'm not even saying they're not a good actor. I'm just saying they're not an athlete, and they shouldn't be playing an athlete, and they're really, really overrated in their roles as athletes. Let me give you an example. Most overrated actors who are playing athletes on the big screen. Number five on this list, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise has been in a couple, I guess, sports movies. You remember him and Jerry Maguire. He was the agent or whatever. Is The Color of Money a sports movie? What is that, a game movie? I don't know what The Color of Money is. The Color of Money is actually a pretty decent movie. But do you remember Tom Cruise in All the Right Moves? Or do you remember Tom Cruise just in pretty much any role that he plays? Because, see, the most basic of athletic prowess is the art of just running. Have you ever seen Tom Cruise running? Now, forget for a minute that All the Right Moves is a horrible, horrible sports movie. And that they somehow try to convince the audience that this kid's entire career, is he going to get a scholarship? Is not, comes down to one play, and he makes a mistake, and it's so, so ludicrous, whatever. But just watch Tom Cruise running. You can probably see it in, like, The Firm. You can probably see it in any movie he's in. When he does his karate chopping hands as he runs, I'm going to give you just a little bit of insight. Myself and my wife, Mrs. Dose, we will be watching. I shouldn't tell this. I'm probably going to get in trouble for telling this. We'll be watching, like, you know, our kids playing, you know, youth soccer, or youth basketball, or whatever they're in. And we will actually say to each other, look, that kid runs with Tom Cruise hands. When you might be a really good actor, Tom Cruise. You're not an athlete. And when you run with your karate chopping hands, And I actually have a phrase for saying they run with Tom Cruise hands. You're probably not an athlete, and you probably shouldn't be playing one. It's number five on our list. Actors who are really, really overrated playing athletes. Number four on our list. Got to kind of go back in the time machine again, go back to kind of the 80s. Ralph Macchio. Now, Ralph Macchio did two Karate Kid movies. I guess I'm going to put those kind of athletic, sort of athletic things. But here's the problem. He's playing like a 15 or a 16-year-old kid, but he's like 26, 27, and he's playing it. Now, the fact that at 27, you look like an awkward 15-year-old says you might not be the most athletic. I mean, the fact that I look at, well, yeah, he's kind of a spindly little nerd, and he looks like he has acne. Yeah, I guess he's 15. Yeah, except for you're almost 30. Doesn't that tell you a little bit that you... Plus, can you please explain to me why Sweep the Leg Johnny gets penalized for a kick to the knee, but Daniel LaRusso, or whatever his name was, wins the tournament with a kick to the face? Can someone please explain that to me? I haven't figured that out yet. Ralph Macchio comes in at number four. Has no business playing an athlete. Number three on our list... Old time listeners to the old Daily Dose radio show they're going to get mad at me for this one. Wesley Snipes. Wesley Snipes has been in some athletic movies. You'll remember him from Major League. You remember him from White Men Can't Jump. You might remember him from The Fan when he played a baseball player. And you might look at those movies and you say, well, you know, Wesley in Major League, remember he played Willie Mays Hayes? He looked like an okay athlete. He looked like a little guy that was pretty quick. Until you watch White Men Can't Jump. And White Men Can't Jump is a pretty good movie. If you haven't seen it, you want something a little bit different, go check it out. But White Men Can't Jump, the whole thing, he plays Sidney Dean. He's a basketball hustler, and the whole thing is that he would rather look pretty than be good. He's in there with Woody Harrelson, and Harrelson is kind of the looks ugly player, but he knocks down the shots. And he says to Sidney Dean, well, you'd rather look pretty than win. Here's the problem. Snipes can't play. You can tell he's not a basketball player. He doesn't look pretty doing anything in this movie Maybe in the scenes when he's sitting and talking, but he can't play basketball. In fact, when you watch the scenes of him playing basketball, any move that he makes, they put in slow motion because it's so atrocious. And even in slow motion, it is painful to watch him try to play basketball. They're still horrible, horrible moves. Wesley Snipes, not a basketball player. Maybe he can run, I don't know. He doesn't have Tom Cruise hands, but he can't play basketball. I can tell you that right now. Number two on our list, Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves has played a quarterback twice. He was a starting quarterback in The Replacements, you might remember, and he played, it wasn't really a sports movie, but he played a quarterback in Point Break. He was, Shane Falco in The Replacements, and then he was Johnny Utah in Point Break. The only problem, just one problem with him being a quarterback, he can't throw. At all. Like, not at all. In fact, these movies, they brought in former UCLA quarterback and head, a guy that is he's been a head coach at the college level, Rick Neuheisel. They brought him in and basically said, can you fix Keanu Reeves and make him look like a quarterback? Here's my only question to that. If what we saw in those movies, if what we saw is the better Keanu Reeves? What did he look like before? Like, do we have some outtakes of what Keanu Reeves used to look like? Because I can throw it left-handed and look better than Keanu Reeves looks right now. So can someone please get like the extended DVD version? And they're like, now here's what Keanu used to look like. Because the finished product is horrible. I can only imagine what it used to look like. Vicon Dios, bro. Number one on our list. Oh, you're going to get mad at this one. You're not going to like this one. I've mentioned this to a couple people and they're not very happy with me already. Number one on our list, actors who are really, really overrated playing athletes. Sylvester Stallone. I'm sorry. Pick a Rocky movie. Pick one. Doesn't matter. He looks horrible. What else was he in? Grudge Match, I think, as like a 90-year-old. Driven. He was a race car driver. Which at least size-wise he fit. Over the Top. I don't know if he was Over the Top was like an arm wrestling movie back in the 80s, and I don't know if he was any good, but when he turned his hat backwards, it gave him like super strength. He had another awful movie, Cliffhanger. That was out there too. But here's the thing with Sylvester Stallone to me. A few different things. When you look at him, when he gets in the fights, and I'm not saying that, like the Rocky movie, the first Rocky, not like Rocky III when him and, you know, Apollo Creed are like tickling each other in the ocean with their high socks. I'm not talking about that one. But the first Rocky, it's kind of gritty and it's kind of old. And granted, I don't understand what he's saying. I can't understand a word he says the entire movie. And granted, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And basically, who's his wife? Adrian Talyashire, I think. Granted, she basically just spends the entire movie either screaming at her brother or crying. That's all she does, I think, the entire movie. But the story itself is a pretty good story. The problem is that you're not a fighter, and you don't move like a fighter, and you don't act like a fighter, and you don't, especially in, for one, have we ever seen in, like, how many Rockies are there? Like 100? There's like 8 Rocky movies. I've never seen the man dodge a punch or block a punch yet. 8 movies. You wouldn't put one hand up? I've got Mr. T throwing a haymaker. You wouldn't think to put an arm up and try to block it the entire movie. But here's the biggest problem I have with Sylvester Stallone. When he gets hit, it's like, it's not an athletic movie. It's like he has like stage or ballet or dance training, not athletic training, because he kind of like jumps and he like flails in the air. Now, you might think that looks good in Hollywood. Can you imagine for 1 second a heavyweight champion getting punched and jumping into the air like that? It's just, Sylvester Stallone is absolutely horrible playing an athlete of any kind whatsoever. Can't dodge a punch, can't block a punch. And plus, you're like 5'5 and like 165 pounds playing a heavyweight. You couldn't write this role for a middleweight champion. It still would have been good. You just wouldn't look so ridiculous out there. There is our final top five of the week. Hey, next week, got something a little bit different for you next week. Next week, I've got more of you. I've got some of your emails. You know, I've received some really, really good emails, and I want to give you a chance to hear some of them, and I will answer some of those emails. Some of them are very, very interesting. Some of it, we've gotten emails from some bizarre places. We've gotten some emails, not just from different states. I've gotten some emails from different countries. You will not want to miss the email show next week. If you get a chance, please, please, please go to iTunes. Go to one of the sites that I gave you before that has podcasts. Give us that 5-star rating and review. It helps us so, so much. As usual, have to thank JSP. Could not do this without you. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I will see you all next week for the email show. Have a great week, everybody.